Joining us at this point in time, we do have former Attorney General Govan Nicholas. Good morning to you. Nice to have you with us on our program.
Good morning, Satish, and good morning to all your listeners on 106.5.
There's a topic we've been discussing since Sunday, and I see that you've made some pretty strong pronouncements on the entire matter, and that is the proposed changes to the coat of arms, the removal of the three ships, replacing it with the steel pan, and so on. Let's begin by you telling us your views. Go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, let me just say that I have no issue with reviewing the symbols and emblems associated with the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago. I just find it a little strange that one, dealing with the Constitutional Reform Commission report, that this issue was brought up, because quite frankly, I would have been very surprised if prior to Sunday's announcement that people were sitting around their tables at home wondering when those three ships would be removed from the coat of arms so that they will feel safe in the country, so that prices will come down to an affordable level, salaries will go up, that healthcare would be provided, etc. I really don't think that this was an issue from the consultation committee. Of course, I could be wrong because I haven't actually seen their report. But this seems to have just come out of the blue. Now, the other thing is this. Eric Williams, who is considered the father of the new Trinidad and Tobago, the post-independence Trinidad and Tobago, he was the one who was responsible and endorsed this coat of arms. And as an historian of note, he actually, I listened to a recording yesterday where he stated that one should be very cautious in revising and reviewing the nation's emblems, because of course a lot of thought would have gone into it. The other thing is this, there is actually a committee that is supposed to be set up under the National Emblems of Trinidad and Tobago Regulations Act, which is responsible for making recommendations for changes to the emblems. And there is, of course, a procedure. So when the Prime Minister came out with this suggestion out of the blue, having ignored recommendations such as proportional representation and fixed dates for elections, which in fact were recommendations made by the Constitutional Reform Committee, I was taken aback. And then I started to think about it and wondered what would be the impact of this change. And then the numbers just started to go wild in my mind, because then I realized that every single government document, every single government emblem, whether it be the badges on the police, the Coast Guard, the regiment, whether it be emblems in schools, in ministries, whether it be stationery, whether it be passports, birth certificates, and of course, our currency, would all have to be changed in order to reflect this change in the emblem. And all of a sudden, I was seeing that hundreds of millions of would have had to have been incurred at this time, which I don't think the country is in a position to afford.
Several elements of the discussion are, I don't want to use the term troubling, but our cause for concern, and they're mostly focused on the process by which this is taking place. On the program here, we've had all kinds of discussions, and some have put forward the position that a decision as important as this one should have some sort of input from the general public. But number one, do you agree? And number two, how do we engage in such a process?
Well, again, I agree with that. And the committee that is supposed to be set up again under the National Emblems of Trinidad and Tobago Regulations Act would be the one to engage in this level of consultation, I would imagine, because they're the ones who would make the recommendations for any changes. And of course, when you think about how the coat of arms came about, when you read the history of the number of people who would have been involved in the research and the planning of this and the bringing it to fruition, you would understand that this was not a willy-nilly knee-jerk exercise. And importantly, now I understand the outcry about Christopher Columbus. And it is very easy to get caught up in, you know, the fact that Christopher Columbus was a tyrant of sorts. But the reality is that Trinidad and Tobago, or in fact Trinidad, came into being, whether you like it or not, in terms of La Trinidad, La Trinity, whatever it is that was the founding name that led to Trinidad, as a result of Christopher Columbus and his rediscovery of Trinidad. Of course, when he came here, there would have been the Caribs and the Arawaks in significant number who would have been here for many, many years. My research suggests that they were here some 7,000 years before Christopher Columbus actually arrived here. But Christopher Columbus put in motion our modern history. And it meant that because of his rediscovery, Spain colonized Trinidad, which then led to England colonizing Trinidad. And everything that we are today, more or less, can be traced back to that landing. And the boats that symbolize the landing actually symbolize the new dawn of Trinidad. Now, I have also heard people comment, that especially from an African point of view, that somehow Christopher Columbus is to be blamed for atrocities on African people, which doesn't add up in my view, because the first enslaved Africans arrived in Trinidad, I believe, is around 1606. And Christopher Columbus died in 1506. So it's 100 years after the death of Christopher Columbus, the first African enslaved people were brought here by the Dutch. So that the people who really and truly were affected by Christopher Columbus's tyranny, and which, of course, it is really the Spanish government. One can blame a host of other people for what could be described as a difficult time for the Caribs and the Arawaks. The people who should really be complaining are, in fact, the Caribs and the Arawaks, who were the people who suffered the most and whose history would have been changed as a result of that landing.
Your perspective is an interesting one, and the historical reference should paint a clearer picture of whether or not we are approaching this in the right way or not, or whether the reasons for approaching this or trying to address it are justified. Yesterday I spoke to the head of the organization that recommended to the government that this action be taken, and that's Shabaka Kambon, and he described this as a victory. And he was very elated to know that this had taken place, and he saw it as, he actually used those words, that this was a victory. Do you think it is?
I don't see how it honestly, and of course people will probably attack me for saying this, but I don't see how this constitutes a victory for anybody. I believe that a lot of consultation has to go into making such a decision. But if it is that the mere action is to showcase our PAN as a national instrument, that to me doesn't take us any further. It doesn't take the African descendants who live in Trinidad and Tobago any further either. And I would much rather see, and I have difficulty with a number of pro-African commentators in Trinidad and Tobago who, in my view, focus on the wrong thing. I believe very, very strongly, and being a partial descendant of enslaved Africans and indentured laborers and perhaps even slave masters, all mixed up into one, I tend to see, or I'm able to see things from a variety of perspectives. I have always campaigned for the upliftment and the independence and the empowerment of the African people in Trinidad and Tobago, whom I see are always trampled upon and misused, whether it be for as a vote bank and a target of great Mama Giza. Because when you look at Trinidad and Tobago, you find that, and again, it pains me, that so many of the young people of African descent are not going the road of progressive, hopeful, sustainable development goals. But instead, they have lost hope, and their target careers suggest hopelessness. It suggests short-termism and hopelessness. What I would like to see are the energies of the government and these bodies that speak to African empowerment, not concentrate on symbols. Because even with the PAN, what has the government done with regards to really empowering the PAN in Trinidad and Tobago? Most recently, we saw where the land that was supposed to have been allocated for PAN Trinbago was being given to somebody else for a cricket academy. We have not really pushed the development of PAN as an instrument to be exported, both as a in physical instrument or as culture, which is something, if you are going to position yourself as the home of PAN, the world's supposed to know that the best PAN comes from Trinidad, that people are supposed to be lining up all over the world to buy PAN from Trinidad, that we have the most magnificent PAN factory that is employing thousands of people to supply PAN to every nook and cranny across the globe. But we haven't done that. We haven't focused on entrepreneurship for the young African descendant to ensure that they get themselves in a position where they can look to a future with hope, where they can raise a family and feel proud and not get involved in gang activity or criminal activity. Those are the things I believe are the most important things to focus on, rather than symbols that mean nothing to these people at the end of the day.
Yeah, we had some pretty we've been having some pretty interesting discussions, and I referenced that what we are discussing today is very, very similar to what we discussed, and I went back to the Hansard of May 1st, 1995, when they were debating in Parliament back then the holiday Indian Arrival Day, and whether it should be called Indian Arrival Day or whether it should be called Arrival Day. And the very same discussions and positions and perspectives that were put forward in favor and against back then are the very same discussions we are having today about the steel pan for and against and who it represents and inclusiveness and all those things. And it highlights in a very great way that, that we've not been able to effectively deal with some of the problems that we have in identifying who we really are and how included we are in what is described as national. And that's because of our cosmopolitan nature. And this morning people were saying, well, let's add the TASA. Dr. Jerome T. Luxing is saying, well, add the TASA. People say, add the dental. And I suggested to them that it's just convoluting a discussion about what really is national and how do we accept to ourselves we are part of this thing that we consider to be national. So we're talking about steel pan and we could talk about everything else, but we're not addressing the real issue. Do you think that we will ever get to a stage in this country where we can have overall consensus on things like these, or do you believe it's just something we'll have to deal with all the while because of how we are made up?
The problem is that we continue to politicize these sorts of issues. And once we continue to politicize that, then every people will think that they need to take a side. We need in Trinidad and Tobago, because I've reached a point where I am really, really fed up with politicians. You wouldn't believe how fed up I am and disgusted I am, politicians in Trinidad and Tobago, who continue to mamagay this country, mamagay the citizens, and divide the citizens. We are 1.3, 1.5 million people. The majority of us, well, I believe all of us, would have come to Trinidad and Tobago at some point, or our ancestors would have come to Trinidad and Tobago. And we made Trinidad and Tobago our home. We are citizens of Trinidad and Tobago. We are no longer, oh yeah, Africans or Indians or Syrians or Chinese. We are citizens of Trinidad and Tobago. And I recently had a conversation with somebody in London where they were actually kind of flabbergasted because they weren't aware of the makeup of like Jamaica, and they came across this Chinese Jamaican who basically said he's Jamaican. And when he opened his mouth, he sounded like Bob Marley, and they didn't understand how, these people could be so patriotic to Jamaica as a Chinese ethnic group. We in Trinidad and Tobago have to stop dividing ourselves based on where our ancestors came from. We have to stop dividing ourselves in terms of our religion, in terms of our geographic location where we live in Trinidad and Tobago. And we need to understand, all of us, that the only way we will move Trinidad and Tobago forward is if we approach the issues as a holistic people.
Mm.
Because the national security of Trinidad and Tobago affects us all. The health service affects us all. I say affects us all, but both the education and the health has become a little skewed because, of course, those who could afford private medical and private health, private education are doing superbly better than those who cannot. And again, that in my view is wrong, because a lot of the frustration that comes out of people, that comes out of communities, is because they don't have access to proper education. It's because they don't have access to proper health care. When you have to look at your granny in the hospital, being placed on a bed in a corridor, And you're seeing your granny die in front of you because there is nobody taking care of granny. And you know that your friend or your neighbor who might be involved in some kind of illicit activity is able to send their granny to private medical care. You automatically become frustrated and you think, maybe I need to do the same. And you see, we don't think about those sorts of things when we address the issue of crime in Trinidad. We don't understand how inequity contributes to criminal activity. We don't understand how lack of education, lack of community, lack of coming together, and instead of the constant discrimination and division of Trinidad and Tobago, actually continues to hurt us as a people, because we can't get Trinidad and Tobago right until we decide that we are all in this together.
For those of you who may have joined the conversation, we are speaking with former Attorney General Garvin Nicholas. We're talking about all these things related to the coat of arms and some of the problems that continue to plague us. Feel free to join the conversation on 625-2257. I think we have a call. Let's see who this is. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to Mr. Nicholas. Mr. Nicholas, why are you joining the conversation so late in the day with the positive aspects of it? Because earlier on, I was trying to get you to set this to remind you that in a few days' time, we're going to hear echo of the founding father of the country that said that there shall be no Mother India, no Mother Africa, no Mother Syria. And if you hold those truths to be self-evident, then why is there this propensity of persons to believe that this change proposed on the emblem is an African thing? It's not an African thing, it's a Trinidadian thing. To say it's an African thing, then you would have to say that the person of Afro descent, born, raised, and living in Trinidad and Tobago, is not a Trinidadian. Because we're speaking of a national emblem of Trinidad and Tobago. So this disquiet in the national community about this, which they call an African thing going on the thing, and we want one from the other communities, and we want this one and we want that one. This is so irrelevant. I think that what should have come from your quota, sir, as somebody who aspired to hold office in this country, is that this is a beautiful thing. Let us do more. But that was not initially what I heard from your good self. Just wanted to make that point.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay. I think the caller might have misunderstood what I was saying. I did quite frankly speak to the African contributions because those are the voices that I heard immediately after the announcement. These are the and we spoke to about Kafra Kambo, and we spoke about others who welcomed the change. And they will, again, unfortunately, even with the suggestion of including the TASA, you were seeing where people were taking a corner based on how they view the steel pan as opposed to the TASA culturally. And but my point is this. And I am not interested in dividing Trinidad and Tobago. I have never been. In fact, the many years ago, when I first got involved in politics back as a local government councillor, I actually spoke to that same issue with regards to there being no Mother India, no Mother Africa. And it is documented somewhere around in one of my articles that I wrote. Because that has always been my stance on how I should approach Trinidad and Tobago. Because I have an absolute love for Trinidad and Tobago. This is my country. And I love the people, all the people of Trinidad and Tobago. So I don't discriminate against people. Every time that I have had the opportunity to serve this country, I serve this country approaching it from the point of view that I serve all the people, regardless of ethnicity, even their political affiliation. So I just want to get that clear.
Let's take another call. 625-2257. And of course, your WhatsApp messages, keep sending those to 306-1065. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Calling from Durbasa Trace in Pinal. Mr. Nicholas, if you're looking for a unifying factor in Trinidad and Tobago, it's not going to be the pan. It's a musical instrument, and not everybody like it. Secondly, there's a crazy argument going around that if you ask to include more instruments or more representation, that asking for inclusion is divisive because you ought to subscribe to the pan, and if you don't, you are somehow not, you know, you are dissing the whole process that we are trying to build around the pan. Another fantasy that is in the air, and I heard it from your lips this morning too, it's a crazy thing. You know, properly educated people believing that because we want to sell the pan, and there's enough people for me to take that collective we, that people want it. I have taken the position that it's been around. Musicians have heard it. If they like it enough, they would learn to play it properly and play it. And yet you hear people complaining, you can't hear it here, you can't hear it there, and whatnot. Yesterday I was in a Hindu press, and they were playing the dantal. And coming back, I got caught up in a Hindu wedding, and the size of the wedding tells me there would have been tasa, no pan around. So in my world, there's dantal and tasa. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Go ahead.
When I spoke to creating pan for sale, I was more thinking about the international community as an export. If it is that we are recognizing pan as a national instrument, and we recognize there's a World Pan Day and all of that, I just think that there is a lot more that we could capitalize on as an economy. It is, again, it is not that I'm choosing one over the other. I enjoy basically all musical instruments, and I like music of all genres. So again, I'm just saying that instead of using the pan as a symbol of transformation, by putting it on the coat of arms, and I premise this by saying that I think any change to the coat of arms or any of the emblems should go through the proper process of consultation. I am not here to do a one-man consultation with you, Satish. I think that would be wrong. That is not the way in which these things are supposed to be done. My issue that I guess brought me here this morning was the fact that I recognized that the process adopted didn't seem to be the correct process. I also believe that the cost involved is prohibitive at this time, especially given our economic situation. And I also believe that the mere amendment to the coat of arms doesn't in fact change anything of significance for the people of Trinidad and Tobago at this time. And there are a number of other things that should be given priority that affect the lives and livelihood of all the citizens of Trinidad and Tobago more readily.
Liz, we're going to have to leave our interview here this morning, but I think we need to have another one to focus on some other issues, politics and all things involved. But I want to thank you for being with us here this morning and giving us your views on what has turned into a really, really controversial issue right here in Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you once again for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Satish.